The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. And this evening, I wanted to do the last of a three-part series of talks that I've been giving on concentration. And this is the final talk, perhaps. So as I've said in the first two parts in this series, that the concentration is considered very important in Buddhist meditation practice, both for doing pure concentration practice, but also for mindfulness practice. Mindfulness practice can only go really deep if it's coupled together, yoked together with a strong ability to be concentrated, to be stable, to have really stable attention in the present moment. An unstable attention is an attention that keeps wandering off into the past and the future, wandering off into what is called discursive thinking. And discursive thinking is, one way of defining it is having conversations in your head, carrying on a discourse in your head. So you're talking to yourself, you're making commentary about something, about what's happening in the present, about what's happening in the past, the future, about what's happening nowhere, in any particular place, but fantasy, maybe. Maybe it is a conversation with someone else, imagining conversations. For people who have a strong ability to visualize rather than to verbalize in their thinking, they might be seeing a whole scene, rehearsing or reviewing a scene, an event from the past, anticipated scene in the future, or just in fantasy and just kind of having these scenes. And so that kind of discursive thinking is certainly has its place in life, but it's often what helps make the mind unstable, because when the mind is involved in that kind of thinking, it tends to jump around and it tends to focus a lot on the ideas and concepts that we're thinking about rather than the mind being settled on itself. And so in order to have a strong concentration, the mind has to settle on itself and no longer be spinning out or caught up in the discursive thinking. And this is very important for both mindfulness and for concentration practice, partly because it's only when the veils of discursive thinking stop, then we can see much more clearly what's going on. So there's a number of ways of developing concentration. There are different practices people do. One of the simplest ones, almost universal ones in Buddhism, is focusing on breathing. Just trying to keep the mind centered on breathing. The mind wanders off, you come back to the breath. The mind wanders off, you come back to the breath. Until the discursive mind settles down, quiets down, gives up, whatever it takes. And then the mind is settled on itself, and then the mind's not going to go anywhere beyond just be in the present moment. So the breath is one thing. In our tradition, we also practice developing concentration through the practice of loving kindness, which has the added benefit that you're cultivating your friendliness, your goodwill, which is a wonderful quality to have. And there's other practices for developing concentration. Now, one of the factors that's developing concentration is a little bit different than perhaps most activities that we try to engage in, because there's probably some activities that are like this, where you both have to engage and you have to let go at the same time, because if you try too hard, you mess it up. You know, you agitate the mind. But if you don't try at all, then you can't get concentrated. And so this balance between making effort and not making effort is kind of the art of concentration. Now, if you're really, the mind is spinning a lot, then mostly what you need to do is to make effort. You don't have to worry about, usually you don't have to worry too much about the effortless part. And so sometimes it just, you know, the mind is spinning a lot. Some people find they just keep coming back. And it's kind of like taming a wild horse, like I said in the last talk, that eventually the horse quiets down, the discursive mind quiets down. because he just doesn't have anywhere to go, because you keep reining it in. So sometimes that's what's needed. Sometimes, even with a very busy discursive mind, there is an art in practice where letting go is still very useful. And what do you have to let go of? What concerns, what interests, what feelings? Let go of being focused on, so the mind can settle on itself. And it takes it can take a lot of convincing. Some people have really deeply seated, perhaps unconscious beliefs that it is really important to think what you're thinking. Otherwise, you wouldn't. You would. Why would you do it? And why would you do it so ferociously? So there has to be some questioning of this, and if you can question deep enough and really feel this is not to my best interest at this particular time, then to relax. And sometimes a very deep relaxation can overcome the spinning out of the mind just as well as the kind of making a lot of effort and taming the mind. So one of these ways. But as the mind starts to get concentrated, starts to settle down, this play between the interplay or the balance between making effort and letting go, effort and not making effort, becomes very important. In fact, that when the mind gets really concentrated, more and more concentrated it is, the less effort needs to be applied. And in fact, if you apply effort at some point, you can't get more concentrated. Actually, if you apply effort sometimes, every effort will pull you out of the concentrated state. So maybe at the beginning, it requires a lot of effort to apply yourself. And then slowly over time, you need to apply yourself less and less and less and less, until at some point you don't have to apply yourself at all, and it's just effortless. And if the mind starts to wander off or not quite there, it's mostly a matter of letting go. And it's a very interesting point in meditation practice that some people can experience, where the mind is concentrated enough, still enough, settled enough on itself, that when the mind begins picking up a discursive thread of thought, starts thinking about something, you can feel the mind getting involved in that, applying effort there, and you say, no thanks. Don't need to go there. Actually, not only don't need to go there, but to go there is a loss. It kind of diminishes the peace, the settledness, the expansiveness of the mind, the beauty that comes with concentration practice. And so you actually feel that the discursive thinking is, you don't want to pick it up, because by picking it up, you lose something that's more important. Whereas before that point, when the mind is all discursive, then the mind is arguing with itself, with you, this can't be important. This is boring. Why would anybody focus on the breath? There's really important things to do here. And so the argument goes that way. But when the mind gets concentrated, it's really obvious. There's no more discussion is needed. Because it's just so clear that that getting involved in discursive thinking pulls you out, out of something that's really nice. So the last talk I gave, I ended with the idea that one of the things that's helpful when we do concentration practice is to start becoming aware of how concentration, the state of concentration, affects us. What happens to us when it... So we can watch and notice the changes, the physiological and psychological changes that go on when we get concentrated. And it's fascinating, there's a lot of physiological changes that come into play when a person starts getting concentrated. The more deeply concentrated a person becomes, the greater the physiological changes. Almost all of them extremely beneficial. Some of them feel very healing. You can actually feel like healing energy in your body. Create a lot of peace, reducing a lot of stress. The body becomes very relaxed. And there's a kind of way in which when the mind gets really concentrated, that it's very good for the body. The body kind of releases a lot of its tensions and becomes softer. Maybe not, your tendons might not get softer, so maybe you can't, stretch in yoga as much, a lot more, but there's a lot more softness all over the body. And then there's psychological changes as well. Also quite healing for all kinds of psychological problems that people have. So to monitor oneself. So one of the things about concentration practice, to develop concentration, as opposed to developing mindfulness, is mindfulness practice has a lot to do with seeing something clearly, seeing the present moment clearly. So seeing clearly that, now I have a feeling. Seeing clearly or feeling clearly, now there's a sound outside. Seeing clearly that now I'm breathing and this is how the breath is. So there's a little bit like there's an object to attention. It's to see something clearly is the focus of mindfulness. For concentration practice, it's not about seeing something clearly, which is a little, you can, for this purpose of this talk, say it's to see something objectively, the object of attention, but rather it's to become aware of the subjective experience you're having. So how it feels for you. So in concentration practice, the focus is a little more on becoming aware and wise about the subjective feeling and shifts and changes that happen as you get concentrated. Now, for some people, this is a setup to suffer. Because rather than get concentrated, they get miserable. Because some people become so important to get concentrated, and they're looking for every possible sign of concentration. And if you want to get concentrated too much, it doesn't work. And you have to almost give up wanting to get concentrated in order to get concentrated. And maybe give up thinking that you're in charge and it's up to your efforts if you can just engineer it to get concentrated. And so if there's a very strong habit of being the person, wanting to be a person in charge, being in control, measuring yourself, being very self-conscious with your self-experience, trying to accomplish something in meditation can somehow, you just get more agitated. It kind of becomes a block. So letting go, and some teachers talk a lot about letting go and trusting the experience, letting unfold on its own time and place. But so the concentration practice does involve, however, the subject becoming aware, monitoring how you feel subjectively. And this is where some people get bored because there's much more important things to do to be present for your own psychophysical experience right here and now. It's better to sit fantasizing about sex or food or there's all kinds of wonder or fantasize about what you're most afraid of. All kinds of wonderful things, right? And so to be willing to let go of that and begin settling into your body, settling into your inner experience, and resting there and beginning to sense and feel it in a very open, relaxed way. So without getting relaxed, there's no concentration. So if you get tight and try to strive, you interfere with it. But if you get too relaxed, you fall asleep, it won't work either. So how do you find, so it's kind of this delicate thing where we find our way. So as people start getting concentrated, a number of things begin to happen. One is, and then one of the most important turning points, is when the mind is no longer easily getting lost in discursive thinking. You're not so caught up in the world of discursive thinking, and so the mind is not going to go someplace else, except it's going to be here for our present moment experience. And it's not a sharp line, it's kind of often a gradual gradual movement towards more and more being here and less discursive thinking. Usually, then it becomes easier and easier to stay present for whatever it is you're focusing on. So if you're focusing on the breath, it becomes easier and easier to stay with that. And you can be aware of many, many breaths in a row because the mind's not going to go anywhere. Or if you're doing loving-kindness meditation, you can stay with the practice, stay with the phrases for a long period of time. The mind's not going to go anywhere. You're there. As people get settled down and settle into, then there are these physiological changes that begin happening, and it's useful to start noticing what these are. So one of them, a common one, is that there might be a feeling of lightness in the body. So the body starts being lighter. Sometimes the body, or parts of the body, might feel heavier. Both those are symptoms of getting concentrated, heavy and lightness. Sometimes there's tingling. feeling that might happen. Sometimes around the face, the mouth, the forehead, sometimes in the hands and the arms, sometimes in the chest. Different places things are tingling, and sometimes tingling feels like warmth, a nice feeling of warmth, soothing feeling of warmth. Sometimes the usual hard, maybe people, you don't think this way until this begins happening, but the hard sense of having a physical body and its boundaries of the body begin to dissolve, and the sense that the body is kind of solid begins to break up, and the body starts doesn't feel so solid anymore, and you don't feel so much the boundaries of your body, and the boundaries of the body tend to become porous or open or even sometimes even fully disappear, and you don't have a solid sense of a body. And then with these kinds of changes, sometimes there becomes a feeling of pleasure or joy, is often the word for it. And so there's a feeling of well-being that begins welling up. And this is one of the things that makes concentration practice compelling for people because of how good they start feeling. And nowadays we can say, well, it's the serotonin that's being released, it's the oxytocin that's being released. Maybe that's true, and it doesn't diminish its value. And so there's a sense of well-being that begins occurring, and sometimes you feel this biofeedback system where you start feeling the tingling, the lightness, the joy, the pleasure that's there, and you can start feel that as you stay with the breath, as you stay on your object of concentration, there's a feedback loop. And the more concentrated, the more present you are for your focus, the more this joy or the well-being, the more it gets stronger. And it becomes very much very compelling then, because you see that feedback loop. It's like a cheerleader. It says, keep going. You know, you're doing the right thing. And so then you can get kind of pulled into this world of well-being, of joy. So much so that sometimes it becomes rapturous. And some people, the most intense forms of rapture or joy that they ever experience in their life is in meditation practice, because it can get quite intense. Occasionally it gets so intense that it frightens people. It gets too much for them, what goes on. As the subjective experience of the body getting lighter or softer and more focused and settled, and this joy happens, generally, another thing that happens for people is any physical pain that they've been living with tends to go away. Not forever, but there some people will use concentration practice as a way of avoiding physical pain. And I think that anybody who does a lot of meditation sooner or later will probably do that. And I've done that. But usually, if you're always trying to use the meditation to escape your pain, sooner or later, you run into a dead end. But it's useful when it can happen. So it's one of the things that's very nice. So that's kind of, I think, so the mind also starts, it's almost like a physiological change in the mind. Not only does the discursive mind begin becoming quieter, and the mind gets quieter and quieter, but also feels more expansive or more empty in a nice way, like it has lots of space. A mind which is caught up in its discursive thinking is claustrophobic, has very little space in it. But a mind that is concentrated has lots of space. And so just you can feel the joy, the lightness, the clarity, the openness of this open, relaxed mind. And it feels very nice, very good. You with me enough? Is it too foreign, or so should we continue a little bit? So as I said, part of the task of doing this concentration practice is to be aware of the subjective elements that are coming into play. In the Buddhist tradition, there are five different factors that come into play when the concentration practice really starts taking off. And taking off, sometimes it can feel like when you really take off, it's like you're flying. So it feels so good. or sometimes when I'm getting close to being really concentrated, to me it feels like I've caught the wave, like I used to do body surfing and stuff, and you catch the wave, you know, it's kind of thrill, and it's kind of thrill, that's really kind of the feeling, for this thrill, and almost like it takes your breath away. It's great. As this happens, there's five factors that are come into play that are particularly significant. The first two are kind of a pair, and the first is called usually in our tradition is called the initial application of mind, and the second is called sustained application of mind, which is maybe a fancy way of saying of putting your attention somewhere and keeping it there. So the mind wanders off, and what important thing you have to do is to bring the mind back on the object. And that's a particular functioning of the mind, to come back. It's a different functioning of the mind, once you're back, to stay there, to sustain the attention. And so these two factors are what being developed in the early stages of strong concentration. And they're not necessarily, and they're needed. They're needed. You keep coming back, keep applying yourself. And the analogy for this kind of coming back and applying yourself, sustaining it, the analogy that the Buddha gave to adapt it a little bit for the modern world would be like taking dry flour and sprinkling water into it. And then you knead the flour until you get dough, and all the flour is equally wet. And so you take this, as you keep applying yourself, coming back and applying yourself, it's like you're kneading and developing. And the water is joy. So what's happening is you get more and more focused in this way, is you begin, the sense of well-being or joy begins to become stronger and stronger, and you kind of can feel it, it's kind of like you're spreading it and developing it, and it becomes more and more nice. I know some teachers like to call this joy or this well-being that wells up. They talk about it as being really beautiful, a really beautiful feeling inside. It's a kind of feeling of purity or clarity or beauty. So these first two factors are this initial application of mind and the sustained application of mind. The third factor is joy, which I've talked about some now. And the way that tradition talks about this factor of joy is that it's a mental factor primarily. And so it involves kind of a mental, when it's really strong, kind of mental thrill. You might not see it as a mental event when you first have it, but you will you will eventually. But kind of a much more mental. It's like a thrill and excitement, and it's a kind of a funny excitement, because if you get too excited about your excitement, you pop out of the concentration. And it's very common for people to have first kind of experiences of getting concentrated in a strong way, and just the deep peace of the mind, discursive thinking falls away, and it's so different from what they're used to. They might get really excited, oh boy, and then they pop out. Or the other that happens is sometimes people get afraid, because it's so foreign. The way that they've lived their life has been dependent on thinking certain thoughts, even kind of subconsciously thinking about orienting themselves to the world in a certain way, having certain feelings that are always there that kind of keep them grounded in themselves. I've known people who, oddly enough, maybe it's, I don't know if it's odd, but are a little bit attached to their suffering, because they've gotten so used to it over so many decades, they don't know who they are if they don't have it. And so, if it goes away, they kind of like look for it again, And so sometimes these strong states of concentration are disorienting for people, and it can produce fear, and that they pop up because of that. So this joy is a third factor. The fourth factor that comes into play is usually translated into English as happiness. And the happiness is there together with the joy initially, but because the joy in the early stages is usually stronger than the happiness, or dominates, so you don't really feel the happiness, though some people say it's the happiness is there anyway, just hidden. And so what happens as the practice gets deeper, is that the mental excitement, thrill of joy, begins to abate, quiets down. And that as the mind quiets, gets more and more calm, and this, then what gets, and the joy is no longer so strong, then you start seeing or welling up of the happiness that's there. And the happiness is feels much more physical. It feels more sublime. It feels more like contentment or something really sweet and easeful or pleasant in the body. Most people say it's much more enjoyable than the joy. Some people say there can't be anything better than this joy until they have this sweeter happiness. The analogy the Buddha gave for the joy part of strong meditation was that of a of a lake in which there are no streams running into it, and there's no rain. So in other words, there's no input, no stimulus coming from outside. So when you're deeply enough meditating, you're no longer tuned in to sights, sounds, smells, the things of the world. You're discursive. Your thinking mind is not thinking about other things. You can hear, but you don't really tuned into hearing, and you're not really getting any input from the world anymore, or from the inner world of your thinking either. And so that lake is like that. However, this lake has a underwater spring that's sending up refreshing great streams of water up into the lake. That's how the lake replenishes itself. That's how it refreshes itself, is this stream. And so there's no more input from the outside, but you feel this inner movement, this inner joy, this inner that wells up inside, that refreshes you, that feels good. And it's quite something to feel really strong joy welling up that's not there for any reason. I mean, it's there for the reason being, I mean, there's not like, you haven't won the lottery. You haven't gotten to do a date with the most beautiful person in the world. You haven't, gotten the promotion, or, it isn't that you have the best recreational opportunities. You know, the usual things that we maybe think that make us joyful, there's no object, there's nothing in the world outside that's making us joyful or happy. It's all happening inside, this upwelling. And it's quite, for some people, it's a revolutionary thing to appreciate, to understand that a strong sense of joy and well-being can exist without getting what you want in the world, without rearranging the world. It's like, then why am I chasing all these things? Maybe some of these things I'm chasing are overrated. So joy is this spring. And so sometimes the energy of joy can be quite strong, and people actually feel like kundalini-like energy is moving through the body as part of it. The analogy the Buddha gave for the happiness stage, when there's just happiness is there, is also a kind of a lake. But this is a lake where that's completely still, cool, refreshing lake. Remember, this is hot India he lived in, so cool, refreshing is really good. And it's a cool, refreshing lake filled with lotus blossoms. And some of the lotus blossoms are underwater, which apparently they can do, and some of them are resting on top of the water. But there's a whole bunch of them underneath the water, and they're all floating in this very still but very refreshing water, very peaceful. Have you ever been kind of gone underwater and like an ocean, and how peaceful and quiet it is there, just to look up at the waves above? It's really quiet and peaceful. In the analogy it says, and no part of the lotus blossoms that are underwater are not touched by the refreshing water. So here, in this deeper happiness, it feels like all of who we are, whole being, is somehow touched and saturated by this feeling of well-being, of happiness, that's very peaceful. And there's no movement anymore. It's very still and quiet. And it's very satisfying, very meaningful, this experience. So then, the fifth factor that comes into play is one-pointedness, one-pointedness can mean either that you're really focused on one thing, you're really gathered together and focused on one thing, or that the other aspect is the mind is unified, it's gathered together. The usual mind that goes about daily life is kind of fragmented, and it tends to be spin off into many different things, and almost like it has many concerns all at once. You sit, you know, you know, maybe you're thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. Now, maybe you're meditating, right? And you're thinking about how you're going to get concentrated. That's what your mind is thinking. I'm going to get concentrated. But your stomach is hungry. So your discursive mind is thinking about what's for dinner. But you had an argument at work earlier in the day, and so you still feel the adrenaline and everything that's pumping through your body, and you feel kind of agitated, and you feel also agitation. So your wish to get concentrated and your discursive thinking about dinner and your stomach hungry and the agitation from work are all kind of there together. And that's considered to be a fragmented state. As opposed to, unified is that our intention, what we want, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what's happening in the body, are all in harmony and all gathered together for the same purpose at the same time. They're all in harmony for the purpose of getting concentrated. So this gathering together, this unification, or one-pointedness, that happens as we get more and more into it. So that one-pointedness gets, you know, stronger and stronger, and when it gets strong enough, and the happiness begins to fade or fall away as we get more concentrated, then the experience it gets replaced with is called equanimity. Deep state of equanimity, where there's a very strong sense of purity in the mind. My mind feels very, very pure and very, very still, very quiet. The analogy for this the Buddha gave is of a person who has just come, taken a nice bath in a beautiful lake, come out completely clean, and they take in a completely clean, fresh, white cotton sheet and cover their whole body in this clean, nice sheet to cover their white, their clean body. And then you would sit there so that no part of the body is not touched by this white sheet. So here, the analogy of the water is used in this analogy is symbolically for joy and happiness. But when the joy and happiness falls away, there's no more water. You're dry. You have this nice sheet. But this the white sheet in ancient India was considered something that's very pure. It's not blemished by anything. It's not stained. And so now the mind is unblemished, unstained, very pure, very still, very quiet, because it's gotten really concentrated. It's a great thing to do. It's temporary. And so sooner or later, the mind comes out of that. And in fact, concentration, like all things, is an impermanent phenomenon. And this is a very important, people who do concentration practice, it's very important to appreciate this, because it's often, unless you're really adept at this, it's not up to you how long you can stay concentrated. It has a lifetime, and you'll get concentrated for a little while, and then you come out. And sometimes it might just be for a couple of minutes. But and then as you develop it, it might be 5 minutes or 10 minutes and longer. But it has, you know, it's not a fault of yours that you come out. It's just that the momentum, the lifetime of that concentration state has come to an end. And so then you have to practice again and do it again. And then you dip down again next time. And you dip down again next time. For someone whose purpose of practice is to become free, as opposed to get concentrated, then coming out of concentration is just as important as coming in. And there also the point is to be relaxed, not then to hold on to the concentration state, not to measure yourself against the loss of concentration, not to be disappointed, not to cling and be greedy for to have that again, but be able to come out with some sense of freedom and ease. And even though you're losing something that feels really good, if you want to be free, you let it go. Okay, that's okay. And then next time you go back in. And learning this fluidity, the flexibility to go into concentration and come out is part of the art of getting concentrated. It's not only about going in and getting settled and focused. It's just as important to learn how to come out. And if you learn how to come out, then you're in a much better position also to couple the concentration with mindfulness. Because as you come out, you have a chance to be more mindful in a way that you weren't when you're deeply concentrated. And the freer you are coming out, the less you get disappointed about coming out, or you start measuring yourself or congratulating yourself, look at me, I should get a concentration badge. I hope everybody noticed. You know, now I'm a good person. And there's all kinds of ways in which people get caught up in it. If we learn through repetition, by doing this many over and over again, not to be caught by it, just allow us to come up in a free and easy way, then we can be in a position to then bring in stronger mindfulness and see more deeply into our experience in a more in a way that brings more freedom into our lives. So, some people, concentration practice is easy. They can fall into concentration states relatively easily. It's not necessarily a good thing to be able to fall into it easily, though it can be. And some people, it takes a lot of effort. Some people don't have minds that concentrate easily. It's not a personal fault to have such a mind. It's just a different kind of mind. I don't have a strong innate ability to get concentrated, and so it didn't come easily to me, but it was through repetition and doing it that slowly my mind got settled and focused and was able to develop more concentration. Whatever way it is for you, whether it's a slow process that takes years or a fast process that takes days, if it's too fast, I don't think it's so good, in my own opinion. But if it's a slow process, whatever how long it takes, it's good. It's really good. Because maybe if it's slow, it's slow because there's a really good reason for it to be slow. Maybe you're not maybe it's not a time for you to get deeply concentrated quickly. There has to be preparation for it. There has to be, you have to be set up for it. You have to mature in a certain kind of way. You have to clean up your ethics in a certain kind of way. There's a variety of developmental things that need to happen, and those take their time, and it's a good time. It's good not to be in a hurry. Let yourself mature, let yourself develop, and let it take the time that it takes. It's all good. So, those are my thoughts that I wanted to share with you about concentration. We have a couple of minutes, and I'm kind of eager to hear what you think of all that. Maybe in the form of what kind of questions for clarification or questions you have about that. Maybe we can take a couple.
What happens to the focus on the breath as you're moving through these stages? After you start to feel the joy that you sort of let go of the breath, and the breath is just a means to get concentrated and at peace?
Yes, thank you for that. I meant to talk about that. The breath, it's one of the physiological changes that happens is that the breathing changes quite a bit when you get concentrated. And it changes in different ways for different people. But generally, it gets slower and calmer and more subtle. And the stronger the concentration, the more subtle and quieter it gets. And one of the reasons for that is that because the discursive mind is not so active, we don't need so much energy. We're not metabolizing so much. Or say differently, one of the biggest energy sinks in the body is the brain thinking. And it's exhausting, you know, this poor brain that's, you know, working, you know, overheating. And so when the brain finally quiets down enough that it's not involved in a lot of this high energy thinking, high octane thinking, then you don't need as much energy to be. And I think the way that energy is moved through the body or what's needed for energy release in the body is oxygen. And so you don't need so much oxygen in your system anymore. And so when you don't need so much oxygen in your system, you don't need to breathe so much. So if you go running, you breathe heavily, right? Because you need a lot of oxygen. So the breathing gets calmer and calmer and calmer, so much so that sometimes the breath disappears. And maybe you're still breathing. but you can't find it. It just feels like it stopped. And because you don't need to breathe, and some people worry. And the first time it happened to me where I was meditating, I was just, you know, minding my own business, following my breath. I was not so, you know, just kind of getting more and more absorbed and concentrating, focused on the breath, or focused. And then at some point I realized I wasn't breathing. And the moment I realized I wasn't breathing, it was, because if you don't breathe, you die, right? So I got, you know. And eventually I learned that you don't die if you stop breathing in meditation. It's okay, because it actually feels quite good. You know, you feel good and wonderful. You feel alive. You feel very alive, you know. You don't feel like you're about to pass out. So that's what it shifts in the breathing. But then on the focus on the breath is your question. So this varies from person to person, also from teacher to teacher, what they say. Some people will keep the focus on the breath as long as the breath is there. As long as you can feel something. It might just be a little movement, little pressure. And some people say that you use the breath until you start getting some of these symptoms or signs of concentration arising. And some of these can be physiological things, like you feel this pleasure and this joy, this nice feeling in your body. Sometimes there's some people will see things, visions, like little spots or fields of white light or yellow light or color that they might see. And some people say then focus on these signs and symptoms and let them grow and develop. And that becomes, so you let go of the breath and focus on that. Okay, so we should probably stop. Should we stop? No, yeah. I don't want to keep you hostage here. Learning more about concentration, more than you want to learn. So, if you can, I'll stay here if you want to ask questions. But thank you all for your attention.